Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello there and welcome to episode 42 of the AI Comic Pod, brought to you as always by the Anfield Index. I'm your lone host this evening, Stu. Unfortunately, Rory can't be with us. I can't even be creative enough this week to think of an amazing excuse. I've normally got something lined up, but it's just been one of those days, folks. So I'm flying solo on this one, as seems to be the habit. But I am joined by Mr. Kaylon Karim, who's decided to come on. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm all right, Stu. Thanks for inviting me, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, I don't think we've had you on for a while. I can't remember.
Yeah,
when
it's
you
been
were
it's been
on.
A long time.
Let
yeah.
me see.
It was that was still Daredevil 2.
Jesus, it was Daredevil season 2. Yeah, that's wrong. That was May of last year.
Yeah, but it's not. I don't think it was anybody's fault. I mean, you've asked me on a couple pods in between the time. It's just
that you secretly hate
us. Scheduling and shit like it just gets in the way. And yeah, I mean,
and the fact that you secretly don't like us, so it's okay. We can read between the lines. We're grown ups, just about, and we can accept it that sometimes
it's
people
jealousy,
don't like
Stu,
us.
It's jealousy. You know, I've also got one of these pods going on, and I know how difficult it is to get this shit going. So yeah, it's all jealousy.
Well, that's fine. I don't mind people being jealous. We have got a good thing going. So this week we're going to look, finally, we're going to get round to looking at Wonder Woman, doing a review. I think we did it, the preview was done about two months ago, maybe 6 weeks ago. We had Joey Connors on. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get Joey on because he lives in America, so it's just an absolute logistical nightmare to get anything sorted. But we will have Joey's probably going to be on with me at some point in the near future when we get to talking comics about Batman. But today, as I say, we're going to do a bit of a review of Wonder Woman, try and look at the film that's given a bit of a shot in the arm to the DC Extended Universe. A lot of people thought that this could be a make or break moment, and I think it's fair to say it's been pretty unanimously well received. It seems to have been more of a make than a break. It's grossing just under $800 million off a budget of $150, which is already an incredible return when you think that Batman vs. Superman had twice the budget and made about $50 million extra. So it's pulling way, way above its weight. I got some figures together before. It's got the best opening weekend of any film by a female director. It's got the most positive reviews of any DCEU film. Now, bear in mind, that doesn't include the Nolan films. The DCEU is Batman vs. Superman onwards. So it's ticked a lot of boxes. That most of our sort of comic-y friends on Twitter and what have you have seen it. And I don't think I've seen anyone with anything really bad to say. Why don't we just jump straight in there? What were your overall thoughts before you went into it? Were you excited or apprehensive or some kind of weird mix of the two?
It was a very big mix of the two. It was a huge mix of the two. I can't tell you how conflicted I was walking into the movie. They also, I must just tell viewers that one of the things that's going to get in the way here is that I managed to watch Spider-Man before I watched Wonder Woman. Yeah. One of those absolutely rare things that happened. But that was, it obviously has an influence on, because I am the most massive Spider-Man fan, right? Like that's got to be put into this. But once Wonder Woman was announced and everything was sort of, you know, even though I hate trailers, I don't watch trailers. I'm the opposite of you, Stu. I try to stay away from all previews and stuff like that. Although I did listen to the Wonder Woman preview because it focused so much on the comic stuff. And it's one of the things I just love about, you know, the show is when you can focus on the comics, and because I don't, you know, so that for me, it's a very big point of getting information and learning about what happens in the comics and learning about the culture, you know, so that was a big thing for me. And Joey is just the most incredible Wonder Woman fan. Yeah. So I've been trying to talk to him off of camera and just trying to get some information from him. But there was a lot going on this film, right? Because we've seen how studios can fuck up the marketing of a film by getting feminism involved where feminism comes in and it's used for just selfish marketing purposes. That movie is like, for example, Ghostbusters, when it came in. Ghostbusters went like this. Here's a movie, and we're going to replace the men with the women. And then obviously, the dickheads of the internet came on and said, oh, you can't replace men with women. That's ridiculous. Men are special. Women are not special. How are you going to do this? This is wrong. And then we started realizing that the movie was not going to be as good as it was, as we wanted it to be. Let's call it that.
Yeah.
At that point, the studio then used the dickheads to market the film for them by saying, oh, if you don't like this, you're not, you know, you're anti-feminism. And that led to a lot of nonsense. You know, I was really worried that something like that was going to happen in this movie. But thankfully, from Wonder Woman, you cannot separate the feminism from the character because it was built on that, right? So I was really happy that from the get-go, we seem to have this view of it's a woman-led project and a woman-directed project, and obviously the character is going to lead this quite a lot, and a lot depends on who that person is. And then there was obviously the Gal Gadot thing with the IDF, and that was, yeah, I mean, that caused a lot of. I had to put this out and ask a couple people, you know, what they thought about it. Should I still go watch the movie anyway? And there were a lot of people who basically said, you know, they gave me a lot of feedback. And obviously, I went to go end up watching the movie because you can't critique a thing properly without actually watching it. So, I mean, we might talk about it, we might not. But in the end, obviously, we went to go watch the movie. And it took about, I'd say about like 10 minutes for me to get over myself, because it's very difficult to walk into a movie with that kind of baggage, right? And then watch it unbiasedly. And it took about 10 minutes, and I gave myself a kick up the ass, and I said, listen, you've got to start watching the fucking movie like a movie. Like, it's a superhero movie. You have to try and enjoy it. Get out of your own way. And that's what I started doing. And by the end, I got to say, I enjoyed the movie quite a lot. I enjoyed it. So overall, it was – I don't think I'm as excited about it as other people are. I didn't feel it was – you know, to their extent, I just thought it was a really good superhero movie. I walked out the cinema with a really, really good feeling. I was pretty happy with the way it went.
Yeah. I wasn't going to go too much into some of the controversy around it. I mean, the only time that feminism really seems to have reared its head was when certain cinemas were doing the female-only showings, which I thought was a great idea, because you've got a hero. She's the physical embodiment of power for women. And Joey and I said it several times on the preview, people seem to think that she's just, you know, a female superhero. She is the equal of Superman, and Superman is regarded as being, certainly in DC, the be all and end all, and she can go toe to toe with him. She has on several occasions beaten up the rest of the Justice League. So she is, you know, she
and
should
Stu,
be the
if I can come in, you're like away, just away from comics. I certainly want you to finish, but certainly away from comics. If we just talk about movies, frankly, Like, you can say what you want to about Batman versus Superman, but frankly, Wonder Woman saved that movie.
Yeah, you know, I'm inclined to agree.
I mean, she's walked in. I don't know what happened. I don't know what it was, because it was obviously the same director. It was the same and everything that was happening. But it was when she walked in the last half an hour or however long she was in there for that movie, especially as Wonder Woman, was the best bits of that movie. And that set everything up so well. I mean, it's important for, I think, people to very much realize how powerful Wonder Woman is in the comic universe, because she never gets her due,
especially
male dominated way of, and how movies have come out, you know, everything is about the male dominated characters. It's you know, Avengers only has the one woman, and obviously you have Superman and Batman and Iron Man, you know, everything is so, it's so understated when you say, oh, we're going to do Wonder Woman. I can tell you though, people who read comics, they were absolutely excited. They were beside themselves with joy. And then people watch the movies. After they watch Superman versus Batman, they were like, this is not just like overdue. This is necessary now, because there's no other character you can bring. Look at what she did to Superman versus Batman. We need this. We need this now. So yeah, I mean, from that point of view, what an awesome amount of excitement. That was cool, man.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with what you said there. I think her little cameo, and she was only on screen for probably, as Wonder Woman, maybe 15 minutes, if that. But she really did pull it together. And the biggest testament you can have to her is she's a founding member of the Justice League. And she's part of DC's Holy Trinity, which is Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And that pays tribute to the alien with the godlike powers, the actual god, because bear in mind, Wonder Woman is a god, and then Batman, you know, the man, the rich man who stands alongside the alien and the god, and they are the very cornerstone that the whole of DC Comics has been built on for 75 years. That's how crucial she is. She is one of the supports of the whole of the DC universe, and if that doesn't get people to sort of grasp the magnitude of how big this character is and how big this movie is, then I don't know what will. But it also makes it really sad that it's taken this long to get a Wonder Woman film off the ground. In the same way, is it next year or the year after, it will be the first female-led MCU film. When Captain Marvel comes out and when Black Panther comes out, it will be the first superhero... the first superhero film since Blade to be led by a black man, certainly the first one under the MCU umbrella to be led by a black character. So people are still chipping away at these barriers. They're still trying to get these firsts out, but it's sad that it's taken this long to get them. But hopefully, in the way that, say, Deadpool broke down the walls of, you can have a good film that's R-rated, that's funny, but has great characters and a great storyline and works on every level. They can now say, look, it's possible for us to make a female-led film, exactly as you've said, that doesn't have to have feminism rammed down your throat. It can be about a woman without it being about feminism. It can be about a black character without it being about equal rights. It can just be about the character, the story, the people, the emotion, and all the rest of it. And you won't find a bigger Wonder Woman fan than Joey. You just will not find one. And since the film came out, the number of people I've seen that have been chatting to him on Twitter and have been asking him for recommendations and saying, oh, you know, what did this bit mean, or what's the ramifications of this? And I did the same. As soon as I came out, he was there messaging me going, what was it like? And I set his expectations that it was fucking unreal. And I told him he was going to walk out with the biggest grin on his face. And I instantly came home and bought 4 or 5 graphic novels. And then Cuzzy, he did the same. When he came home, he was like, right, lads, I need recommendations on Wonder Woman books. And that is a really big sign, I think. If you watch the film and it makes you go, you know what? This character has just really caught my attention. I want to go and read about it. Because we all know what it's like. Once you get one book, you get 2, you get 5, and then you've got, you know, you're collecting an entire run of them. But then you'll branch out. You'll go, well, hang on, this Wonder Woman story links into this Batman one. And then you'll go on a Batman run. Chris has started getting it, 433 Chris. He's got that hunger now where he buys one book and then he goes, shit, I've bought 10.
I started doing this as well. It was I bought a couple of comic books recently, just specifically after the Spider-Man, and
I did it after Spider-Man.
And yeah, I've gotten Chris and Kyle, a couple of people on Twitter, just messaging me, along with Joey, along with you obviously as well, Stu, just say, get this one, this is what you have to go next, and do this. And I'm like, oh my god, it's so exciting. Yeah. It's really cool. It's amazing. It's amazing. I love it, man.
So it's with saying about how long it's taken them to get this done, apparently Patty Jenkins first wanted to do this in 2005, and it seems to have been a bit of a trend, more so with DC, where they have these plans in place. We want to do X film, but things just don't fall into place. And Patty Jenkins fell pregnant and had to walk away from the project. But in fairness to DC, they kept the project pinned to her. And it sounds like they said to her, well, we're not going to go off and find another director. We want you to do this. And they waited. So they waited 10 years between that decision and when they actually started filming. And that's a hell of an achievement from DC, to have held on to one of their three biggest characters for 10 years, when it would have been easier for them to go after, I don't know, Joss Whedon, for example, and say, do you want to have a go at doing it? Because I think he did, didn't he? Was it him who started doing a draft of the script, and it's been universally panned because it was horrendously sexist? I think they only went at him sort of half-assed, that the real plan was always that Patty Jenkins was going to do it. And she herself has said, this is the film that she has always wanted to do her entire life, her entire career. She has always wanted to be the director of Wonder Woman. So from Gal Gadot, I think, has said similar, that from the point of view of any female actress, there must be certain roles. Like, all men want to be James Bond and stuff like that. I think a lot of female actresses would love the chance to be the ultimate female superhero. It's just one of those things. And the fact that she's been able to do it, she's been able to do it to universal acclaim. It's kicked off something. I would like to think now that maybe we might get some more female characters coming out, because at the minute we've only really got Wonder Woman, Scarlet Witch and Black Widow. We've got Captain Marvel coming in, but there's so many others that the two companies can do. I would really like it if this was a catalyst now to say, look, we're over that first hurdle. Let's just fucking go for it. Who's next? Who else can we throw into the mix? And Gal Gadot showed a level of commitment to this. She did a lot of the reshoots when she was something like 3 months pregnant. So she wasn't willing to let anything get in the way of the vision of, they all wanted this to be brilliant. And even though she was presumably feeling like shit, she was still, right, I'll come and I'll do these reshoots, because they all wanted it to be perfect. And you've got to take your hat off to people who are willing to do that.
For certain, I think if we start off with Patty Jenkins, I think it was, again, to put the kudos onto DC here, is they believed in her.
Yeah.
And
she's not got,
you know,
a lot
they offered
of
thought to her as well. Yeah. Her CV is pretty amazing. She's done some amazing films. It's easy to believe in her. It's easy to believe in people who do things that well, but they offered Thor to her. Now think about that. Think about that. That Thor is one of the manliest characters.
The one that Kenneth Branagh did?
The first one. Yeah. Yeah. They actually offered it to her. The one that eventually went to the Game of Thrones guy. That one. But they actually offered it to her, and it wasn't working out, and they had to leave it. But she came out of there, and she was like, oh my god, they actually offered, I had Thor for a while, and okay, it didn't work out because it created differences, but wow.
It's one of those
things. This studio gave a woman Thor. That blew her mind. Stu, exactly what you're saying. It's, with a thing like Wonder Woman, you almost have to have a woman to direct it, because I've read a lot of reviews on it now, and I gotta clear up some of the stuff here. Like, just because Wonder Woman is wearing a skimpy outfit, it doesn't mean you have to sexualize it, you know? She's wearing a skimpy outfit, she's wearing a mini skirt and all that. It's not for you to jump in and say, oh, look, Wonder Woman is there for eye candy. She's not. You know, these were, especially the time that Wonder Woman came out, these were symbols of women trying to express themselves and do the things that they wanted to do. The other thing that's been made a lot of, and you'll know this, Stu, in the comic books, but there was a lot of scenes where Wonder Woman was sort of tied and bound, and or somebody else was tied and bound, and they thought that that was all linked specifically to BDSM and kinkiness and that kind of thing. It wasn't really. That was also those were symbols. The woman being bound was a big symbol of the suffrage movement at that time. So if you misunderstand those things and you come out and you do a movie without understanding what those symbols mean, you are going to make a sexist movie. And this like was Joss done Whedon, so tastefully.
Because Joss Whedon was, if you read some of the first lines of it, I know he's a very divisive director, and it's strange to see him do something so sexist when he brought Buffy to the screens. But the script was very, it sounds like it would have been scene one, you know, close up of her tits, scene two, you know, the camera pans longingly Jesus. Up the legs and things like that. It sounds like it could have been a Benny Hill sketch. It really does seem like it could have been just horrendously, really awkward. But I thought the same as you. I thought, surely there's nobody that can tell the story of Wonder Woman like a woman without wanting to sort of sound really fucking obvious. But who else can associate with Wonder Woman's troubles like a woman can? You know, it seems stupid to say it, but...
Well, no, but exactly what you're saying, Stu. How do you bring... obviously, I don't want to get too much into this. This is the comic pod. We want to talk about the movie and comics. But, like, as a guy, you're actually raised the entire time. And comic books are actually guilty of this. Women are dressed differently. They fall differently. They're pictured differently in a few comics, you know. And you're brought up to sort of think of a woman as, again, like an eye candy type of thing. How do you... as a person who's grown up seeing women all in that way, marry the two things of being powerful and being athletic and being sexy if you want and doing all these things, you know, how do you put them all together? And Patty has done that perfectly, hasn't she?
Yeah, I mean, she absolutely has.
At no point in the movie was there any leering, was there any folks. And as somebody who watches a lot of Japanese animation, and you know, just normal animation, I can tell you I'm more or less an expert in this. But like, there was no fan service, as they call it. There was no, you know, lingering on particular parts. There were no weird shots. She didn't fall in a weird position or anything like that. And you notice it throughout the entire movie. Wonder Woman is handled with a sense of like real dignity. She comes out as a, you know, what a wonderful character. She comes out a more full, more developed character than Superman has ever come out in the movie, basically since Christopher Reeves. I think like Superman 1, Christopher Reeves time, that was about the best Superman movie we've seen. But of the more recent ones, it's a bit flat. You can't compare what wonders have been done with Wonder Woman compared to that. It's just chalk and cheese. A ridiculously good job is done in characterization.
Yeah, very much so, because that's pretty much the entire arc, isn't it? She comes from a world, she's very naive in the way of man's world, as they call it. And you see her have to learn everything. She doesn't understand that women are subservient. And to just quickly go back to the dress code thing, you know, the way that the Amazonians are dressed, it's battle attire. They need to be dressed in short skirts because they are flipping and kicking and jumping. They can't be wearing long pants or really baggy clothes because they're so athletic and agile. And then it mirrors that when you see the bit where she's being fitted for sort of normal women's clothes and she's trying to do high kicks. And she's saying, well, how
it's wrong. Yeah, everything is wrong.
she can't process that women wear clothes to look nice, but they're completely unfunctional. You know, that it just doesn't work for her way of life. And she sort of starts off and she's a little bit bumbling. But like you say, towards the end, the arc that she's been on, she is a better person. She's got a better understanding of her powers and she's got a better understanding of her place in the whole world, because she now sort of understands, well, this is clearly what I've been sent here to do. I've been sent here to save the world. And hopefully that side of it is now going to lead in seamlessly to Justice League. So now she knows better than she did in that cameo in Batman versus Superman. We didn't know where she was on her roadmap. Now we know she's done her development in the, you know, the early 1900s. She's had probably 80 odd years of practice, of honing her skills, of life experience to get to where we are now in 2016, 2017, whenever the film's set. So she's going to be the finished article now. She certainly is going to be a lot more in tune with her powers, because towards the end with that fight scene with Ares is when she really grasps, isn't it, that she is the God Killer. She really realizes that she's the one that's got this limitless power inside her. Previously, she thought she was just strong and agile and well-trained, and now she knows she's got something inside of her that's probably quite terrifying. I get enthused just thinking about it. I'm disappointed I've only seen it once, because I came out of it with a huge, huge grin on my face. It was everything I wanted it to be. I'm nowhere near as big a fan as Joey is. I've not read much Wonder Woman. I've only read Wonder Woman in other books. But I came out of that and I just wanted to read solo Wonder Woman books coming back.
Same.
40, 50.
If you look at, I mean, you're talking about, to marry this with what you were saying before with the attire and stuff like that. That scene where, you know, the Germans basically come into, you know, the island and start shooting willy-nilly and stuff like that. Like, I mean, okay, they had more advanced weaponry, right? But the way that the Amazons, like the way they fought and the form, the absolute brilliance of it, it was almost like watching sort of 300 again without the, you know, without the focus and all the sort of bulging pictorials. But it was grace and power at the same time, and you could see exactly what this movie was going to be about, you know. And Wonder Woman, it was easy, as brilliant as all the Amazons were throughout the movie, you really start getting a sense of how ridiculously special Wonder Woman is. You know, so by the time you get to the end of the movie, you're actually really, really excited about this character, what she can do. And you really want to look more and see more about what's going to happen. I came out with the exact same thing. I've actually got to go ask Joey about this, was the first thing, because I had a bunch of questions. Because obviously I didn't read the comic books. So I had a ton of questions to ask Joey. I'm sure he's sick of me by now. But the other thing was, I was thinking, that's something I've got to ask him, what comics to get. Second thing, you know, I've got
which comics to read. Well, I can recommend a few graphic novels, because I was coming home. I was walking back to my car after the film, and I was going through Instagram, and on DC's Instagram page, they had a list, and it said, for anyone who's seen Wonder Woman, these are the books he recommends. And they had one which was a really old school one from sort of in the middle, one from the new 52, and then a really recent one. And I just went, well, fuck it, I'm just going to buy those four. And I haven't got around to reading them yet, because I read my books in alphabeticals, and I'm still only up to F for Firestorm. So Wonder Woman's got a long way to go, but I'll get there eventually. And speaking of that, they did a really good job. We didn't know, Joey and I, what they were going to do in terms of the origin story, because Wonder Woman's classic origin is Hippolyta, her mother, couldn't have children. She crafted her from clay, and she prayed to the gods, and she was given life. In the new 52, they completely tore that up and set and made it really conventional, and she had a standard mother-father with Hippolyta and Zeus. Zeus nailed her mother, you know, a mother gave birth. And Joey really hates that, because they took this special character and made her quite normal, because even though she was the child of gods, she was still the child of normal procreation between a male and a female. And it kind of took a little bit of the sheen off the character. And they seem to have done they've taken three different things. They've done the classic Wonder Woman, they've done the new 52 origin, but then they've moved the character around a bit as well, because Steve Trevor and Wonder Woman originally met in World War II. but they wanted them to be World War One, so they shifted it back a few decades because they thought the time period fit better. I don't quite understand why. I'm wondering if it was to do with the angle that they were going with.
Where was Stu? Where's what's his face? Where's Captain America from? What time period? That's World War II, right?
World War II. Yeah.
So maybe they specifically did that to
potentially to sidestep.
Yeah. So they can have like Wonder Woman on a platform by herself, not having to worry about a timeline overlaps. I'm not sure if that's a thing. You'd know much more than me. I'm just like spitballing here.
No, that's a pretty good theory. It could also have been the fact that if it was against the Nazis, at some point people would have expected Hitler. And then I think that starts getting a little bit away from what they want to do, because then it starts getting into a proper classic wartime movie. Although the guy that played the general that was in there, he was actually a real figure. He was a guy that was, I don't know whether he came up with the idea of mustard gas or he was just one of the big users of it. So he was a real evil son of a bitch.
Ugh,
so he's a real historical figure. And I don't know whether it was just that then fitted in better with Dr. Poison, who was obviously, as the name suggests, incredibly into poisons. And I can see why they did it. But that's probably a good shout, you know, that they didn't just want to go, oh, well, Captain America's from World War II as well. So the Americans are making this weapon, but then, there's the English are using this, because people would probably start putting them together and saying, yeah, which is a bit stupid, but, you know, people are stupid. Another thing I really liked before it even started, the new introduction that they did, where they showed that whole landscape of all the characters. So that there's a few in there that look like a tip of the hat to future films like Captain Marvel, the Green Lanterns. But then they also had just classic members. So Hawkman and Hawkgirl were there. Swamp Thing. I spotted Martian Manhunter really easily. Then they had villains. You could make out the Joker and Deathstroke were in there. But there must have been about 60, 70 characters in there. And to me, that was a little sign from DC saying, look, this is what's coming your way over the next 15, 20 years, something like that. Because most of those characters are quite well established. I don't think there was any real left field ones in there. And that started off on a huge high note for me before, you know, we'd even seen anything of Themyscira.
Yeah, that made me smile quite a lot, I must say. I thought I sort of hadn't been really paying attention to the other DC movies if I'd not seen that before, because I was watching it and it was so cool to see all the characters. I recognized a couple of them, like, for example, Shazam and whatnot like that. I haven't been keeping – I don't know if DC do the thing that Marvel do, you know, where they announce and then everybody knows. I mean, it might be, you know.
They do.
So I don't know if
they
do that.
They've got the same sort of thing.
All of those movies?
I don't think they're as strict with the dates, because they've had problems with Captain Marvel. I refuse to call him Shazam because Shazam's a stupid fucking name. But they've done a weird thing. Originally, they were planning on doing a Captain Marvel film and then a Black Adam film, because The Rock has been cast as Black Adam. But now it looks like they've swapped them over and they're going to do Black Adam first and then Captain Marvel, because it looks like Black Adam might be a villain in a future Justice League film, which opens up a whole new world of possibilities, because Black Adam is a strong magic user, and the only thing other than kryptonite that can hurt Superman is magic. And there's actually a really good DC animated film where Black Adam beats the shit out of Superman because he can't compete with magic. So they've swapped things around, but they've got that in the pipeline. They've obviously got The Flash. They're doing a Green Lantern Corps film. We've obviously got the Batman, Suicide Squad 2 is coming out. Gotham City Sirens is coming out, which is being done by David Ayer, who did the first Suicide Squad. So they've got at least half a dozen films signposted, but they're having a lot of problems. Like The Flash is on its third director. Ben Affleck walked away from directing the Batman. They've got Matt Reeves in, which looks a great appointment, but he's now said that he's thrown away the script that Ben Affleck and Jeff Johns wrote, and he's starting it from scratch. They'd cast a villain for the Batman film in Joe Manganiello was doing Deathstroke. He doesn't know if he's going to be involved in that film now, even though they've shot test footage. So they're still trying to play Marvel's game, but they're still sort of limping along with one leg tied behind the back. and it's not going as smooth.
Do you know, it reminds me, this reminds me of like just before, at the time when X-Men and, you know, like Spider-Man and stuff were doing pretty well, you know, all those periods, Marvel at that time would have a smash. You know, Stan Lee tells the story a lot. They'd be selling lots of comics for whatever reason. Like Spider-Man comes on, it starts selling and it gains momentum and it becomes huge, right?
Yeah.
And then DC look at it and say, why is it selling so well? Oh, do you know what? It's because it's red. Let's make some of the superheroes' costumes red now. You know, we have to. And that was missing the point, sort of. And that's what I feel is happening in DC. But the other thing that's happening is Marvel just, you know, I think is releasing a lot more characters than DC, especially if you look at the films. You know, so there's a lot more room there for characterization, whereas everything in DC tends to focus on, you know, a single character versus a single villain, and it rests on those two. So if you can get those really well done, like the Nolan films, then you know it's perfect, and you got it going really well. But if it's more abstract, then you've got a problem. You know, Superman as a character itself, with that whole I'm the most powerful thing ever, you know, basically almost like a god. It's difficult to write stories for him all the time. It's difficult to keep on making him human because he's so, you know, he's so godlike. I thought that might have been a problem for Wonder Woman, actually, because I know how powerful she is. They just got the relationships spot on, and they got so much right in the movie. But yeah, I mean, you can obviously tell, Stu, when I say I don't watch trailers and don't reviews, I don't. The only reason I know about that, the only reason why I know why Marvel has announced their movies, or that Marvel has announced their movies, is because some of the people on my timeline retweeted, and I happen to be online at the time when they do that. But
yeah,
other than that, like, so yeah, that was, I thought I'd just use you to fill in the gap there with my knowledge. My apologies.
You use away. That's what I'm here for. No, I think you're right. And it's another thing that they've got to do now. DC have got to capitalize on this momentum, because there's so much buzz, and they've really shown that they've shown their mettle in this. They've shown that they can do it. They can get the script like Marvel do. They can get the characters right. They can get the casting right like Marvel do. They can get the right director, which has been a lot of people would say that Zack Snyder is a Marmite director. David Ayer did a very good job with Suicide Squad, but then the studio stepped in. But you still had the same rumours going around with this. All of a sudden, a couple of months before the film came out, the online rumours started of, oh, they've had to do some reshoots. Oh, it's because the studio wants it to be less dark and they want it to be more funny. It was nothing to do with that. I don't think people understand the way. I forget which film it was I was talking about. And I always understood it, if it's like connective tissue. You have a storyboard and you go, right, we've got to go from Themyscira to London. And then you go, right, well, we're going to do it like this. But when you actually edit it together, you go, that doesn't really work. We need to do something else in there. So you get everyone back in and you reshoot it and go, right, it flows better now. But people hear, oh, they've called everyone back and they're doing another month of reshoots, and they assume it's a problem. It's not. It's just the icing on the cake. It's the cherry on the top. They're just rounding off the edges and making everything flow better. And that it worked, because that was the criticism from a lot of people for Suicide Squad, was that the editing was wrong and it didn't flow. It just went, this scene is now this scene, and there's no transition in between. There's just, you know, black to white, and there's no grey area. I didn't pick up on that, because it's something I must admit I'm quite oblivious to. Especially on the first time, because I go in and I'm like a, you know, 14-year-old boy. I'm really excited and giddy and bouncy, and I'm full of sweets and sugar. And I don't notice these things. But my friends who are more, you know, like Rory does, you know, Rory noticed more about direction and editing and what have you. And I've not seen anybody criticizing the pace or the way things have been cut together. Whereas as soon as people came out of Suicide Squad and Batman versus Superman, they were all
true.
The editing was wrong.
Yeah.
The pacing was shit. It was, you know, it was 100 mile an hour, then it was flat, then it was 100 mile an hour, and I didn't know whether it was coming or going. This seemed to have a good flow. It was up when it needed to be, and then it just calmed down a little bit, but then it would go when it needed to. I can't think of anything really wrong with it, apart from maybe the villain, because the Dr. Poison isn't really that well known. She's very much a B or C list villain, and it's something I'm going to look at when we start talking about sure. the sequel and where
I thought on that count though, like that was one of the more interesting parts of the movie for me, because you obviously look for the villain, and villains, you know, great villains make great heroes.
Absolutely. That's
what it was.
And
so you're looking
movie.
At Wonder Woman and thinking, you know, my God, I really know that she's the most powerful thing in the DC universe. I'm so looking forward to watching what she does. I wanted to see how they particularly handled the action scenes. I wanted to see how they handled her power. And that's what's, you know, I agree with, it was a really good movie. I agree with everybody who is saying that it was it came off without a hitch, and there's so few criticisms. But, you know, think about this, right? Just to back up what you're saying, DC waited for the director. They waited for such a long time. When the time was right, they did it. They got the casting right. And then if you look at the movie came out right, the direction was wonderful. But then if you look at the villain, there wasn't actually one, but the movie was still so great. You know, like if you think about it, if at the end of the movie, it's almost unsatisfying, right? On paper is a good way to put it. It's unsatisfying on paper. Who did you actually defeat? Well, nobody, because what we're saying here, human beings are actually, they've learned evil. It's not Ares who's making everybody evil, right? It's and all through the movie, you're just thinking like, this was for me a quite large endorsement, is that when we get to London, when we start the whole thing, I've got questions. I had a fucking ton of questions, right, about the movie and where it came from and how Wonder Woman was trying to decide what to do from when. But one of the things that was pretty sensational is when she starts in London and when she starts talking to Steve and everything like that, you're thinking, this woman is a bit loony. I'm going to destroy Ares, and then all the evil is going to die. You're thinking that's silly. Who believes something like? I mean, I know she's grown up on an island and stuff. That's the reason for that. She believes it, but surely at some point, like she can hear herself. You know, this is all getting a bit silly. No one believes her. By the time, I swear to you, right about like before we discover who Ares was in the movie and everything like that, even before that, by the time we get to the bell tower scene, I was utterly convinced. I was utterly convinced that if she defeated Ares, that there would be no evil in the world. And I was looking forward to seeing how they would do that, because how would they do that without it being corny? But I was convinced by her character completely. And then even after she, you know, you get to the end of the movie and you start realizing, well, she starts realizing, hey, it's people. And actually there's a bigger problem here than what this is. You look back at the movie and there's no major evil person now that you can identify as the, you know, the single root cause of all the problems. And the movie still comes off so well.
Yeah.
I just wonder what other superhero movie could have done that to date.
It would be difficult. The only thing I can think of is because there was so much space where they had to explain the character. You couldn't get away with doing that in a Batman film or a Spider-Man film, because the characters are so well known that everyone knows their origin, everyone knows where they're from, what their deal is, what their powers are. A lot of people, as we've said, don't really understand how grand Wonder Woman's powers are, but also don't understand the story of the Amazons and how they came to be. You know, they were the gift from the gods. They, you know, they were given to the world to keep them safe, and they did a really good job. I'd like to know how much of the film they actually spent explaining the mythology that goes behind the Amazons and Themyscira, and because it obviously borrows bits of real life Greek mythology and then just sort of twists them a little bit and gives them the superhero, you know, sheen on the top. But they did a very good job, rather than just, you know, bang, bang, Batman's parents are dead and Uncle Ben's died. They really had to go into the granular detail. And it shows to me, I don't know if there's even one person who was involved in the Green Lantern film, but that's what they didn't do with Green Lantern. They just came
in
and went,
yeah, good point.
They've got these power rings and they're dead powerful. I said all along, the hardest thing with them is that the Green Lantern mythos goes back thousands and thousands of years. It goes back longer than the planet Earth has been populated. And that if you don't cover that somehow, then you don't give people a scale of the grandiosity of the Green Lanterns. They didn't do it. The film flopped for many, many reasons, but it failed on the very first step by not giving that. It's something to say that Marvel did well with Thor. You know, the Thor film wasn't exactly great, the first one, but they did a really good job of explaining Asgard and the different realms and why they are the way they are, and that they visited Earth, and that's why we have these stories about gods, and, you know, they've infiltrated different civilizations throughout history. So they did a
And the side characters
job.
Are characters. In all these movies that you're talking about, the side characters are real characters.
Yeah.
You know, which is from maybe like the first Superman movie, for example, because the only character there is really Superman, you know. So you have to have strong supporting characters around there, otherwise the world isn't real.
Yeah, no, that's a fair comment. Makes sense. And there's one thing I read before, just slightly off topic. This is the first film that Gal Gadot has ever done where she's received top billing. Would you say that casting decision then has been fully justified?
I'm going to divide this up into two things again. And the first thing, I'll just go back to the IDF thing. I think from that perspective, it's very difficult to justify, considering that what she said about her time in the IDF is almost the exact opposite to the values of Wonder Woman. So that was a bit of a problem. I thought, apart from if we take that from after she was cast, she's done a really good job, I think, of portraying the character. And I'm not sure if it's her or if it's the director. Maybe this is a more question for Rory, but also for you, Stu. The only real, it's not even a complaint, because I actually don't know. So more as a point of clarification, you know where she's doing her awesome stuff?
Yeah.
Like, especially when she's picking up the fucking tank, right? Which was, oh man, when she started doing that, I was like, oh my God, right? So she did, she's picking up the tank, but it looks so effortless for her. You know, even in Superman, where you know his power is so much, you know, there were times when he's lifting stuff up. I'm not talking about the big kryptonite thing, more in like the other Superman movies, you know, where he's doing stuff. It looks like it's effort. In this one, it didn't look like it was that much effort, right? But and maybe you can clarify for that. Is that a problem with the direction or the acting, or is that just because she's the most powerful person? And it's really just not an issue for her? Because the reason why I asked this question, and as a point of clarification, is that this, more than many, many other superhero movies I've seen, is the action is much more on point. They've put so much effort into that. And I think they've actually cut their actors a bit short in not showing a fuller version of the action, and not showing more uncut scenes, sort of, because I looked at a couple of makings of and things like that. I think that if you had done that, you can see the amount of effort, the amount of work, the choreography, and the way the characters fit into that, especially, you can see on the island where they're training Wonder Woman, and, you know, Diana is just getting pounded and just takes it like an absolute woman. You know, it's all that is done so unbelievably well. I think it's the closest we've gotten to the sort of best action. Like Deadpool and stuff have done it a bit better, in my view. But certainly for the big, big superheroes, this was the best action I've seen of the whole lot. So, I mean, was that an oversight of direction, or is that just how powerful Wonder Woman is, that she just picks up a tank and it's like made of paper?
I think that's just how powerful she is, because sometimes in some of the older comics, she would say something as if she's got like reserves of power, as if she's got levels of it. And sometimes she calls on Hera, like I think Hera's supposed to be one of the mothers of all the gods, and she'll say something, and then all of a sudden she gets like an extra burst of power. But I would like to think they've done it to really hammer home, look how powerful she is. She can lift up a tank as if she was lifting up, you know, an empty cardboard box. It's no big deal to her. That's how fucking powerful she is. So don't mess with her. That sort of thing. So she's absolutely capable of doing much greater things than that. And that's probably something that you will only get to see in Justice League when you've got them fighting Thanos. She is one of... You can probably count on one hand.
Oh, interesting. Yes, of course.
You can probably count on one hand the number of DC heroes that could actually go toe-to-toe with Thanos and not just be completely...
Even I know how powerful Thanos is.
Darkseid.
I cannot fucking wait to see how that's going to shape up.
That was rookie mistake. Thanos is in Marvel, Darkseid. Darkseid, bad comic boy. It's because I've been watching bloody... Infinity War videos this afternoon, and I've got Thanos on the brain. Darkseid. There are a couple of exceptions to that, where one time Batman went toe to toe with him, but that kind of resulted in Batman being shot back in time, which was really fucking good. That was in the Grant Morrison the Grant Morrison run in the early 2000s. But Wonder Woman's one, you know, she'll go with Darkseid and she'll give him a punch in the face. There's not many are going to be able to do that, other than like Superman and Captain Marvel could give him a good run. So I think when it comes to that, you will really see how powerful she is, and she'll be taking down the parademons, you know, like she was swatting mosquitoes away. It's built up now. You've really established
how
powerful she is, because she's got to be, because don't forget, in the start of Justice League, Superman is in inverted commas dead. So Wonder Woman is the most powerful hero they've got until Superman comes back. So really, she's the one that they potentially will be looking to. She's going to be the one that's going to be leading a lot of the attacks. Batman, you would imagine, is going to be the strategist, because he's the, you know, one of the cleverest people in the DC universe. We're already sort of skipping ahead of... Hopefully Justice League is going to be a logical follow-on of this. Do you think this was a logical follow-on from Batman versus Superman? Do you think it did a good job of taking what we knew and then really expanding upon it?
I do think so. I think what we've got... In a sense, we saw in both... Well, what I really love about how they've taken Wonder Woman and developed her is they gave you a bit of a taste. It's just an hors d'oeuvre, right, in Superman versus Batman. And she fucking lifted the whole movie, right? She carried it. as soon as she came in, it was like, you know, the sun coming up a little bit. Then we go to... You know, her full movie, and it sort of goes back in time. It's looking at, you know, her history, establishing the character a little bit, and we are living in a really interesting age of major storytelling, because it was like one of the things I got from both Wonder Woman and Spider-Man is I walked out of both thinking they've set that up superbly. I can't wait to see the next iteration. You know, what's going to happen. It puts you in a difficult position, because you look back and you think, when you set something up, you can't be the best movie. You know, you have to leave something. You have to leave something out for, whereas every other sort of, all the other DC movies I felt they were doing, within this movie, we have to make everything now. We have to break everything. Everything gets, you know, everything has to be resolved. Let's crush the enemy now. Whereas here, I thought they were just, yeah, this is what she looks like when you know, in that way, huge things are yet to come. And so if we move to the next one, you know, that sets up a really nice little couple steps before we get to see the real huge, so you know, Wonder Woman, unbridled, full power, full throttle, all the way to the hill, just going at it, you know. We got lovely little tidbits. And what that does is it sets it so brilliantly, you know. We even the action sequences, which I loved, but you just felt there was something more there, you know. I love the action sequences, and I loved how they put a character into that and all those sorts of things, but I think you can see what they're doing here. Just a little bit of a taste. You got a starter portion in this movie. Let's go on to something else next, and you sort of, it's whet your appetite. You cannot wait.
Yeah, so that's a pretty logical way for us to start planning ahead and looking at the sequel. Within days of the film coming out, there was already rumours that Wonder Woman 2 was being discussed. And then it came out that Gal Gadot had agreed in principle to do it. And then Patty Jenkins has agreed to do it. And then Chris Pine has agreed to do it. So that's going to be a strange one, because, as we know from the end, spoiler if you haven't seen the film, which would be very strange, Steve Trevor dies. He goes up in the plane and he is blown to smithereens. So either that was a bit of misdirection, like in the end of you know, Dark Knight Rises, or he's just going to be back in flashbacks, because it's supposed to take place during the Cold War.
Okay.
So you're talking, there's a 60-year gap there, or, you know, 55-year gap or something. So there's a lot of story to be told about...
They can't bring him back.
It would cheapen the end of the film if they brought him back, because it's nice that even though he's in the presence of a god, he has that great line where he says, you know, I save the day, but you save the world. Because if she goes off in the plane, then she's not going to be in place to fight Ares. And that's what she needs to do. She's been sent there to take down Ares and to put him back in his place. And there's nobody else really that's going to be able to pilot the plane, because he is the trained pilot.
Yeah.
So he
also, his sacrifice like sort of unlocked God mode for her. Or, well, not God mode, but like,
well,
I don't know what you call it, like beast mode. They were one less than God mode. But like the plane blowing up and she was like, oh no, fuck this shit. You know, she absolutely puts the kick ass onto Ares after that. So, I mean, it's going to diminish this film, I think. As much as I liked, his character. It's you're right. It will be taking it. Might be taking something away. It depends how they do it. Maybe there's a nice way to do it. Maybe, you know, who knows.
I would assume he's going to be in flashbacks, but there's a lot of time to flesh out, not just for Wonder Woman, but also for Diana Prince, because presumably she will have gone back after the war, and she can't go back to Themyscira anymore. So she's now based in Man's World. She's now on our planet, you know, our maps, however you want to say it. She's got to find a normal life. Presumably she's got to find a job. Is she going to be carrying on working with the government? Did she then get involved in the Second World War? But another good reason, I think, for doing it in the Cold War, because the Cold War obviously brought in an even greater threat of nuclear arms. And now you're thinking, well, Wonder Woman has got God mode that she can switch on. I'm going to keep calling it that because I like that. That's the kind of power that you would need if you've got the threat of, you know, country versus country, nuke versus nuke. But what they're going to need for this one, I think, and Joey and I said it in the preview, they're going to have Cheetah. Cheetah is to Wonder Woman what Lex Luthor is to Superman, what the Joker is to Batman, what I don't know, what Magneto is to the X-Men. You know, wherever Wonder Woman is, Cheetah is there in the background. It's got to be the big villain. And then they've got a lot of time in there to explain her backstory about where she came from, how she got her powers, how she was transformed into this half-woman, half-cat creature, why she hates Wonder Woman so much, and then bring that all away from Themyscira and bring it to England or America or Europe or South Africa or wherever the hell it takes place. But they've got all the original components in. It is happening, and supposedly the release date is going to be confirmed at Comic-Con, which is this weekend. So by the time this goes out, we could be just a few days away from some really big announcements from DC. And it would be good. It would be good of them to announce that now and say it's going to be in, you know, July 2019, whatever it is, because then they're still riding the wave. Now, Wonder Woman is still doing well in the cinemas. I think it's the first weekend where it's actually dropped below $1 million, something like that. It's made really good money, and now is the first time that it's just started to dip. So it's probably coming to the end of its run. And now would be a really good time to just keep the hype going by now, but don't forget Wonder Woman 2, because that's probably going to entice people to go and watch it again and to buy more books and to, you know, just keep it going for another few months. And then by the time that happens, Justice League will be out, so you'll get another fix of Wonder Woman, and again, it'll give you another few months of momentum. And it's going to be interesting to see, because now they've set the bar very high. With Suicide Squad, there were glaring mistakes. They know what they've got to do it better. Batman versus Superman had glaring mistakes, so they know what they've got to do for the next Superman film or the next Batman film. It's going to be very hard for them to do better than this on Wonder Woman 2. And it might have a touch of the The Sophomore Syndrome, where the second one is still good, but it just falls a bit short because the first one was so good, so groundbreaking, and so, not perfect, but very, 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 very good, very polished, and with very few problems that you can really
put your finger on. They might be looking to just keep something a little bit in reserve for, you know, for Thanos.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, in between, your director might get really confused as to how the fuck to do that.
Dark side, not Thanos. I've completely thrown you off track, and I'm never going to live this down. I'm going to be ridiculed. This is the end of my comic days. It's terrible. So I personally can't think of any improvements that could be made. Can you think of anything off the top of your head that could have made it, you know, a 10 out of 10 for you?
The only thing, and I've been asking Joey about this in terms of the Wonder Woman universe and the universe that she sort of occupies, and I can sort of understand, but what I'd love is a slightly more prominent role for like just ordinary women. Because, you know, we had a lot of ordinary men in there taking up supporting roles, and they were really rad. I did enjoy the little rabble that Steve put together for to accompany Wonder Woman and how she sort of helps them on their way. I thought the only thing was, and it's difficult to do because the whole point of the movie was that women are disenfranchised, you know, at that time. So you have a bunch of men who are led by, and they might be good men, you know, they might be worthy men, but they're led by absolute palookas. And it takes somebody like Wonder Woman to come along and show them that they can be themselves and there's something worth fighting for. So I don't know if you could have done it in the first movie, but maybe by the time the second movie comes around, there'll be slightly more room, because for a lot of countries in between World War One and World War Two, the, you know, voting rights for women got signed into law and stuff like that. So maybe slightly that, but that's I mean, really, that's me, like, perhaps asking about much, because I mean said it really well, is that you want a simple story. You want a simple story to put on top of this sort of thing. And you do want simple stories because we need more stories like this. I mean, can you imagine being, you guys touched on it on the preview, the Wonder Woman preview, but like, we've just got Doctor Who as a woman now, you know, that's freaking awesome. Ray, Wonder Woman, you know, we've got awesome representation. That was another thing this movie did really well. Look at the Amazons, you know, they were completely diverse. It was great. I wasn't really expecting that. Yeah. I don't think any of the Greek history ever represented them in that way. But that was brilliant. Spider-Man had lots of representation. And what they're showing is that these stories are selling and people want them. And you can make really great movies with, you know, through normal representation of people, you know, giving people decent roles, even if they're a woman or people of Asian origin or whatever, you know. So, That was really nice to see, and I know that's what that's the greater imperative here. So yeah, I don't want to complain too much.
Well, I think one thing that will I would be amazed if they don't better explore Etta Candy, because Etta only had a very small role, but she's a big Wonder Woman ally, a very, very big Wonder Woman ally. So I would assume that when I'm well known for my love of predictions, and I would imagine that when Diana gets, she's presumably after the incident with Ares, she has to go back to the British government and explain what's happened. And she's obviously got to tell them that Steve sacrificed himself and that he died to help the mission. And I would imagine that then she's going to sort of lean on Etta quite a lot, because she's going to need a friend, because she's not got that many people in this world that she actually knows. Certainly not that she's going
to... she can't go back to the island now, right? Like, she's basically banished.
Once you leave Themyscira, you can't find it again. They've been playing around with it in the Rebirth line, but the easiest way to think about it is, once you go, the door is locked. You can't ever get back there.
You can't ever get back.
So she and the cruel thing about that is when you live on the island, I think they're immortal. I don't know whether it's that they're immortal or they live for the Asgardians do. You live for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So, you know, a human lifetime is like, you know, is like click of fingers for you. You know, 80, 90, 100 years. And she sacrifices that. She still ages a lot slower than normal people do. But she is given up a huge divine gift by leaving. And all of the other things, she's leaving a perfect, harmonious island, you know, where there's no prejudice. They do sort of hint at it sometimes. Again, it's something that Joey covers because Joey tends to really like getting into the nitty gritty and the deep things. There's no real sexuality there. They don't have straight or gay. They just have love. You know, there's no labels on it. They don't really have the level of violence and oppression that they have over here, because everyone over there is created equal. They have a primitive society, but it's a primitive society that works and it's quite utopian. So she gives up all of these positive things to come and live in a world which is, she's a second class citizen because she's a woman. She's going to see, you know, people of color treated incredibly differently. She's going to see child abuse, and she's going to walk into a world where murder is common and all of these horrible things. So she's got to have a huge shock to the system when she realizes that the world is more flawed than she could probably ever have imagined. So there's a lot of, we'll probably see a lot more expanding on Diana than we will Wonder Woman in the in the second one. And it's
is one of the things my favorite thing, and it was, it's difficult to have a favorite thing, but my favorite thing about the Wonder Woman movie was especially the scene where she's confronted with what would you call it, like the War Council or whatever.
Yeah, I suppose it was. It was like the British government, wasn't it?
Yeah, kind of thing like that. What I loved there was, you know how we in ordinary everyday life, like your government will do something fuck stupid, right? And you'll be sitting there and saying, but that's just really dumb. Like, why don't you just do it like this, you know? And I thought that was, you know, the common sense approach of what she was saying. You know, she's just walking around saying, but, you know, all this is not making sense. This way of doing things is not making sense. Why are you so invested in war? You know, why is, and how they're looking at it is, listen, little girl, the men are talking.
Yeah.
You're not even supposed to be here. This is a gentleman's club, for fuck's sakes. Why do you think you can just rock up here? And in that scene, she just shows that, like, you know, men, you've had your time to be at the top and demising one. This is what you come up with. This is it.
Yeah,
this
you can't come up with anything total, more intelligent.
And it's inadequate.
Yeah,
it's just, it doesn't work. It's nonsense. And that was, I love that they did that without having to say anything overtly. It's just, this doesn't work. It's a stupid way of doing things. And I would love if they had more scenes like that where it just shows people, you know, like, equality works better. And this way of doing things is silly. War is silly. It's a stupid thing to do. And it should be a last resort, but it's not. And we're still doing that today, you know, so it would be a pertinent thing as well.
I think there will be something along those lines, because it's from what I've read of Wonder Woman, it does seem to be an ongoing theme. As much as she learns in this world, she definitely also tries to educate. You know, she does try to say to people, well, why are you doing this? Like you say, you know, how many big wars have there been just in the last 100 years? You know, when she's going to start learning about this, she will have seen them. By the time we get there, she will have lived through World War One, World War Two, and Vietnam as well. Some of the other atrocities that have happened in there, you know, excluding wars. There's obviously things like the Holocaust have been in there, and, you know, repressive regimes and what have you. And so she presumably is going to start trying to push back on people of, well, why? You know, this is the way we do things over in Themyscira, and, you know, we didn't have any of the problems that you did, but we weren't a bunch of dicks and we weren't men. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, getting her involved, I mean, from that perspective, Gal Gadot as an Israeli, you know, as a Jewish woman, tackling the particular problems of World War II, that will be really cool to see, you know, what they do, how they get her involved, and you know, because it's obviously it's going to be very personal for her. It's impossible not to be. So that's also going to be something to sort of look out and how they handle that kind of thing. And because, you know, yeah, I mean, it's an important part of the world history, and it's especially important for Jewish people. So that's going to be an interesting thing to look out for.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. I think that's a pretty good place for us to wrap up. As usual, we've gone over our allocation. So sorry, whoever's editing, and everyone for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed what we've had to say. If you've got any opinions you want to share, please do fire them at us. You know, we do love getting engaged on these things. If you've got any recommendations you want to make to people, send them to us and we'll pass them out there. If you're after any recommendations, obviously the obvious place to go is to Joey. I can make a few based on the books that I've bought that seem to be really good. Have you got anything you need to promote, Kay? Anything that you've got coming up or you've had out recently?
Out recently, for Global, I've had a recent Global pod with Andrew Vincent, who's PhD in sports science. I hope I've got that right, Andrew. But it's to do with hypermasculinity, which is a problem we don't really talk about in sport. And it just sort of lays out and defines what is a problem and what is not a problem and how it's affecting elite sports at a couple different levels, just to sort of open the conversation. And then there will be a new flipbook out soon, I hope, if I can get around to the editing. So yeah, keep your eyes out for that.
Yeah, good stuff. If you haven't already listened to it, I was doing On the Box yesterday with Gags and Nina, and we did a review of the first episode of season 7 of Game of Thrones. So definitely recommend giving that a listen. We should be back next week with another comic pod. All being well, we're going to be doing our Ant-Man. It's kind of a review, even though it's about a year and a half too late. So it's sort of, we're just going to re-examine Ant-Man because it's one of the unsung heroes of the MCU, a film that most people enjoy. And, you know, why not? It's Paul Rudd. So we'll hopefully come back to that next week. And then the week after that, all being well again, Spider-Man Homecoming review. Unless the curse of the comic pod strikes again and, you know, my laptop blows up. I think that's it. You know where we are, AI Comic Pod on Twitter. We'll catch you next time.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.